So Matt LaFleur spoke yesterday. It's a 10 o'clock hour of Uldy and Tausch, by the way. Spoke yesterday about Quay Walker, who took part in 11-on-11 drill work yesterday for the first time in camp as he works his way back from an ankle injury that's been problematic for him, and he had surgery during OTAs. Sure, Doc McKenzie did a great job. But he called Quay Walker... Well, let's hear what he called Quay Walker, because there are fans that do not think Quay Walker is any good. They may be right, but Matt LaFleur disagrees. Here's Matt LaFleur.
He is the quarterback of the defense, so anytime you're missing that piece, that's a big piece. Not that we don't feel like we have other guys capable of doing that. We certainly feel good about that, and I think those guys have done a nice job, but we know what type of player Quay is and the level that he can play at. And I thought there was a stretch last season where he was playing some really good football. He was getting more comfortable within our scheme, what we were asking him to do, and he was playing at a high level. So it's been a while since he's played football, so he needs to get back ingrained into that. And obviously, the more reps he gets, the more comfortable I think he'll feel and the better he'll play.
I couldn't agree more with Matt LaFleur about the idea that Quay Walker, there was a stretch where it looked like he was playing really good football. Then he hurt his ankle in Seattle, and I don't know what he's going to do this season. But there were encouraging signs for what I thought was really the first time. Like, there's a lot of times where you were wondering what he was doing, and the criticism he received was fair. My question would be, Tausch, what's realistic to expect from him in what is now a contract year since he did not get the fifth-year option?
Is there any player that has more to prove this season than Quay Walker?
Trying to think of wide receivers that are or offensive linemen that are in last years of their contracts. Romeo Dobbs has a lot to prove, does he?
Yes and
Rashid
no.
Walker has a lot to prove.
Yeah. It ain't gonna matter with Sheed, I don't think, but yeah, I look at Quay and his time here. He's obviously a first round pick, and I think he has been good, not great. He's been inconsistent. And the unfortunate part, you mentioned his ankle injury last year against Seattle. You started feeling and just listening to, you know, you can kind of hear and read how coaches talk about people. They can say things that are nondescript or they can be very praiseworthy. He was starting to get that, like, it's all starting to make sense. It's coming around for him. And then, you have a little bit of a setback. And then this offseason, obviously, they don't pick up the option. And I think they want him back, but they want to see more from him. And
oh,
yeah, looks like we might have lost Tausch. We'll reestablish with him in a minute here.
Well, while we work to reconnect with old boy, I would say this: I was very encouraged, and I like Quay. I like what he is capable of physically. I like the fact that he's in a system now that plays to his strength, which he will tell you is, I don't want to spend so much time thinking and diagnosing. I want to react and play fast. That is not when he's at his best as when he's having to do a lot of thinking, and that's what he had to do in Joe Barry's scheme. He does not have to do that in Jeff Hafley's scheme. I like how much ownership he takes. I like the fact that he is extremely hard on himself. I like everything about him, and I really liked that three-game stretch he had before he got hurt in Seattle. I thought it was extremely encouraging. But Tausch is right. He's got a heck of a lot to prove, whether it's to the Packers to give him an extension or to somebody else so they pay him when he hits the free agent market in March. But he has a lot of great qualities as a player, and there, I think he got a bad rep for and as well he should. I'm not excusing his behavior in any way. He got a bad rep for getting ejected from two games. Pushing a inactive tight end on the sideline against the Bills, and the team doctor for, was it Detroit that he got kicked out of? You can't do that, obviously, and he did that as a rookie. But the fact of the matter is that he has improved significantly, and if he is healthy, which he's on the road to being, he could have a really good year for them. And if he has a really good year for them, that elevates that defense even further. Jesse, have we reconnected with the big fella?
We just got him back. Nice timing. Old T's here. Where'd you go?
Yeah. I was still sitting here. I
step on your cord again?
No, I must have hit the driftless sandstone. I don't know how much of the end of that conversation you got, but it was basically, I don't know how you want to divvy up that role of Edgerrin Cooper to Quay Walker, but Edgerrin Cooper is primed to be that Hunter guy, that, you know, the Derek Brooks, if you want to start looking back at some of these great defenses that people have had. And if that's what you're hoping for from this defense, is Quay Walker going to be more of that tackle collector, or are they going to let both guys go hunt and mix and match? I think a lot of that has to do with, do you believe that Quay can be that? Because would anybody here say Quay Walker has been a difference maker as a linebacker in his first 3 years here in Green Bay?
No.
And after 3 years, not to say you can't get better. And I think he's more comfortable with Jeff Hafley's system. But you find your role, and then you play to that role to the highest of your abilities. That's what being a teammate is. Now, that doesn't mean you can't make a pick against the Bears and you can't make some plays. But it just feels like to me, in the conversations that you hear from the different, you know, coaches and players, is – they feel like Edgerrin Cooper is primed to be that guy, that difference maker. And you don't need to have seven difference-making linebackers. You need to have a steady guy that's going to make and compile a ton of tackles. And then you get a dog. And I think Edgerrin Cooper is going to be the dog, and I think Quay Walker is going to be the steady, the steady kind of collector guy. And maybe I'll be wrong, but I think that's what the plan moving forward, if those two are going to be indeed, you know, a big part of your inside linebacking group.
When those guys have been, when you talk about dynamic duo guys like your guy Freddie Varner and Dre Greenlaw were, I think Dre Greenlaw's now with the Broncos. The two guys that were in Tampa. The 49ers version, the previous version that they had, where they had two really dynamic linebackers, was it Willis
Bowman and Willis.
Navarro Bowman? Yeah.
Yep.
You want Quay to be more than a tackle collector, though, right?
I mean, obviously, you want to have dogs all over the place, but you want to have you. What is your defense asking for? Is it asking for you give Edgerrin maybe a little more leeway to go make plays? Just like if you have a stud pass rusher, you let that stud pass rusher freelance a little bit more. And when you do that, that means somebody else has to not be as freelancy, because you have to balance it all out. You can't have 11 freelancers out there. You're going to make some great plays, but you're going to get gashed. That's the balance and trying to figure out. And Jeff Hafley has to A, believe that Quay Walker can be that guy, but then B, also, is he going to do it on a consistent enough basis to make it, I guess, worthwhile to allow that to happen? I think Quay Walker is who he is. I think he's an athletic, long, good linebacker that can collect a lot of tackles. I don't know what we've seen in 3 years to make you think that he is going to be a dynamic playmaking linebacker. And maybe I'll be wrong. I hope I am. But we have not seen that up in the first 3 years here in Green Bay.
Yeah, I would defend him in so much as the first 2 years he was in Joe Barry's system, and it was a programmatic non-fit. It just was not good for him. And he was immature, and he got himself kicked out of games. He deserves tons of criticism, not just excuses that the scheme was a bad fit. He had 9 tackles for loss last year. He had 2.5 sacks. Like, he forced a couple fumbles. Like, he... he was much better in their system. And I think there's a chance that he's better than we think he is, and he can be one of those rare players, because of circumstances, who gets into his fourth year, which usually you kind of are who you are by then, and turns out to be better than what we think he is. Or maybe you'll be right, and he just is what he is, which is...
I think he is a solid, really good NFL player. Just like I thought A.J. Hawk was a solid, really good player. Do I think he's Brian Urlacher? No. I don't.
Are we... in any way, are we crowning Edger and Cooper in the same premature manner that we crowned Jordan Love because of his second half of 2023?
Big play by Eugene Hilton Jr. down the sideline. That was a big, beautiful play. Yeah, I think that's fair. But I'll say this. I think Edger and Cooper was the top-ranked player at his position in the draft process. He fell to 45. Green Bay snapped him up in a great spot for him. It just feels – you watch him play, and last year they obviously didn't trust him to line up right and to do all the right things early in the season, and they didn't play him. But even when he was playing sparingly, good things happened. And so I get it. I think you're going to probably say, well, Jordan Love, we crowned early. I don't envision – I think Edger and Cooper – What is going to be a good season for the expectations you have for him? Pro Bowl?
I mean, I'm not sure the Pro Bowl is. I don't know where his reputation is at in terms of being able to get him horn to be recognized. Again, as a rookie last year, he had 77 tackles. He had 13 tackles for loss. He had 3.5 sacks. He had one interception. He forced one fumble, and he recovered two fumbles. Those are really, really good numbers. Now,
yes.
Here's the thing, and this is straight from the Packers media guide on him. Dating back to 2000, Cooper became the first NFL rookie to hit those marks in a season and became only the second linebacker to hit those marks in a season since 2000, joining A.J. Hawk in 2013. Interesting that there's a lot of people that don't think A.J. Hawk was any good. And in that season that we're talking about, those are the numbers that Edger and Cooper put up. And Edger and Cooper is star-spangled awesome with those numbers, and A.J. Hawk is mid.
Well, that was A.J.'s, what, seventh year?
It is, yes. Mm-hmm. And, so, it was an outlier for him statistically.
And Edger and Cooper didn't play. I don't know what his playing percentage was, but he obviously didn't play a ton in the beginning of the season. So there's a 17th game. There's all these other variables. But perspective is a hell of a deal. And I think the perspective is Edger and Cooper's more athletic. He flies around a little bit more. And his potential to be that playmaking linebacker that we've yearned for in a big way, and we're hoping that he takes that next step. And I believe if he stays healthy that he will. What that looks like, I mean, is he going to be in that category of the greats? We got a long way to go before we're going to crown him into that category.
Edger and Cooper played 45% of the Packers' defensive snaps last year.
What do you think he'll play this year? 80?
80 at minimum.
They ain't going to pull him off. He'll be a third down guy. He'll be everywhere if it goes according to plan, mm-hmm. right? Yep. Are they going to pull him off the field with, you know, when will they pull him off the field?
I'm not sure. If he needs a series off for a blow, maybe. But if you look at where Quay Walker's numbers were before he missed three games, Quay Walker finished the season with 68.6% of the defensive snaps, but he missed one game with a concussion and three with his ankle. You take out four games, I'm guessing he was near 90% for the games he actually played in.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would think that those two guys, that when they go, when they're in base, they'll be on the field. When they're in nickel, they'll be on the field. I would anticipate that. In fact, here's the, I got these numbers now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of the games that he played in, Quay Walker played every single snap.
Yeah.
In another, he played 99% of the snaps, and in one other, he played 88% of the snaps. The other games, he left with an ankle injury, he left with a concussion, and he missed three games completely with an ankle injury. So they will have the one wild card, is we keep being told that Isaiah Simmons is going to have a role on defense. I don't know what it is yet. But yesterday, when they were in the base, it was Cooper, Quay Walker, and Isaiah Simmons. That's a pretty interesting trio, if you ask me.
A lot of athletes. What is all?
Yes, very athletic group. What is also interesting is that from the very beginning, our friends at American Family Insurance have been there for us. I saw the AmFam team at practice the other day as well. They were up there hanging out for practice.
That had to be a couple weeks ago then, right? With that turf toe.
It was last week.
Corner week. Make game day a dream for the whole family at Parking Lot Patio during Kids Day. Before first pitch, head over to the clock tower entrance outside American Family Field and let the fun begin. Free face painting and temporary tattoos, photo ops, yard games, free giveaways, and live music from local DJs. It is the perfect pregame stop for families. Come early, have fun, and make it a day to remember. And it's all thanks to American Family Insurance.
Sorry, I thought there was,
that was a unique
tone of voice there. Sounded like there was more coming.
With, yeah.
That was what?
That was a unique cadence that you concluded that with.
Well, I was going to say dream fearlessly, insure carefully, and then I thought, oh, Jason's breathing heavy. Maybe I'll just let him take it over. And so dream fearlessly, insure carefully. There you go.
More Wildy and Tausch straight ahead. Stick around.
This is Wildy and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
Talk to Uncle Homer in a moment. But we have reached the point in the program where we need to talk about the best team in baseball. And not, no need to bring up certain things that were said on certain people's birthdays.
Oh. Woo! Ooh. Whoa. What happened?
Well, Dylan Jones just—I gotta say who he buried, but he caught a little flat pass and just trucked, pads down it, just trucked out some big oohs and ahs, ran right over a young fella. Good stuff. All right, continue.
Is it good stuff for the guy that got run over?
No, I would think not. I think they let him stiff arm out here. I'm not sure about up by you.
So they're full contact, Tausch?
No, it's not like tackled to the ground. At least not that I've seen so far. But bring your feet. Well, Dylan Jones brought his feet. Let me just put it to you that way.
And the rest of them apparently as well.
The DB did not. No.
The Brewers are now an incredible 44-16 in their last 60 games.
Wow.
They've won 5 in a row. Only 6 more before Alex Stroh can put the whammy on him again and prevent free hamburgers. It is the best 60-game stretch in team history. Again, I don't know how that relates to some of the things that we've discussed on the program timing-wise, Jesse. But
directly, actually.
Does it really start right then?
It might be. Some metrics are the week after certain things were said at Pablo's birthday bash. Other metrics take that week into consideration, but it does go back right up to that point.
That is is that not incredible to you?
A birthday bash that will live in infamy, yes.
You know what's incredible to me is that we have Pablo as our social media king down in Madison, and Jesse loves publicity. Don't you think it would be a fun little thing to put that out? And then do like one of, and again, I am not a social media expert by any stretch, but then how has it gone since? And showcase that it's the best record in club history since Jesse Nelson wanted to fire Pat Murphy.
We have a new stat that's my new favorite to share for how this is going. Not only the updated numbers on, you know, how they've played since May 24th or Memorial Day, whatever metric you want to look at there. The Brewers entering play today are 69-44, 25 games over 500. This is the fastest in franchise history the team has ever gotten to 25 games over 500. So we can officially say now, in a season which I questioned when we should start to have a conversation about the manager's job status, they have never in the history of the team been this good at this point.
Jason, that's the worst take in the history of the show, right?
Yeah. And not only that, like, as much as we criticized people for calling out Dunzo out of his clown car for that Athletics series that they were swept
we were
in.
Right in the end.
In fairness, they didn't win a playoff game. So, but continue, yeah.
And as much attention as that got, this is not even in the same galaxy.
No.
Yeah,
it's amazing because the amount of excellence and, you know, I caught some of the game last night. It just the team. I think the word you used when you watch the Brewers is relentless. Like, there's just, you can see the first couple innings, not a lot brewing, you know, a little slow. And all of a sudden, you get an infield hit, you know, yell it, you get base runners on, and you just keep putting pressure on every at bat and every play. And you have speed throughout the lineup. It has just been a relentless pursuit of winning. And that's bred by Pat Murphy. So, thank God nobody listened to Jesse and even broached the conversation, because Pat Murphy is setting the tone for a group of guys that have bought in. They've bought in a way we have not seen a team buy in. And every move that Matt Arnold has made seems to be making sense. And down in Chicago, our Cubs friends, they're all wondering, like, what did we do? Why are we in this spot? Because they're now, what are they, 4 or 5 games back?
Yeah.
It's an amazing transit. It's what has happened is nothing short of amazing for what this team has done over the last 50 or 60 games.
Another one of my favorite stats now. So the Brewers and Cubs started their series last Monday tied for the NL Central lead. The Brewers now have the second largest division lead in all of baseball. 4 games up on the Cubs here on August 6th.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And over the span, this is underrated. Over the span that we're talking about, where the Brewers are 44-16, the Cubs had like the 4th best record in baseball in that stretch. It's not like they tanked or like things have gone poorly for them. They've been playing well too. We've just been that good. This has been amazing.
It is amazing. Not as amazing as Tausch's trip was to the Rocky Mountains and the Blue Mountains of Coors Light.
Oh, it's always Coors Light in my hand when I need a moment to chill. And when I was out in Golden, Colorado, well, whether you're tailgating, you're going to Red Rocks, doesn't matter what you're doing, enjoy your experience with a cold Coors Light. Brewed with that three-step cold process, cold lager, cold filtered, and cold packaged, because it is made to chill. Refreshingly cold and only 102 calories. Coors Light, it is made to chill. Celebrate responsibly, Coors Brewing Company. Golden, Colorado.
Steve the Homer True joins us next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, driven by Zimbrick Chevrolet in Sun Prairie on 100.5 ESPN. See their full inventory at ZimbrickChevrolet.com.
Whatever you do, make sure do it right. Whatever you do, make sure do it right.
Do you know what that music means? It's time for the Marquette men's basketball boys for the last 36 years. It's time for the hosts, co-host of God Talk, My Faith with Homer and Pip on YouTube, but most importantly, it's the host of the best 60 minutes of your day, allegedly, on ESPN Wisconsin, the Homer Hour. It is Steve the Homer True. Homer, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. I have a job today I never thought I would ever need on this show.
Oh, dear.
I have to solve the disagreement that you and Tausch had about the grade for the Packers.
Mm.
All right. Well, Homer, before you do that, I want to make sure because, and I'm not picking on Jason here, I don't think he fully understood where my head was. It's not about where this team is now.
Wait a minute.
Can I finish?
You just disagree. No, you can't finish because there's no point for your point. You two just disagree. Accept the fact that you disagree. That's all this is. It's okay. You're married.
All right. My point was that had you told me 2 years ago that this team was going to have their quarterback figured out, they had this roster where it's at, and was able to win a playoff game and be a playoff team for the last two seasons after transitioning, I would have said, that is fantastic. Sign me up. A. And not about, well, you regressed from last year. You didn't win a big game and all this. And that's all fair. But I'm saying you give the two-year window, Pella window, a grade, and it's been really dang good. An A for me. And if you want to say A, B, or a B+, plus, I'm not going to fight you on it, but to sit here and say that you're not excited about it, I have a hard time getting my head wrapped around. That's all.
Oh, I gave a B plus. Say, you literally fought me on it.
You said B.
Hold on. Yep. How did you not hear me say I was listening to the show? Because you just repeated exactly what you
said. Yeah, but I had to make sure. But Jason kept going to, they didn't win a game in Philly and the low line. And last year's the ending was super disappointing. But from a two-year rebuild window, it's been awesome. It has been awesome when you replace a Hall of Fame quarterback with somebody that everybody doubted at Utah State if he was accurate enough. And here we are. And nobody is doubting that at this point right now. That was my whole point. Continue.
Okay. All right. Yes, you are correct. It is an A. Jason is wrong. However, what you neglect to mention is, which Jason may be alluding to, that I will speak for him, it's just like the Brewers today, August the 6th. It's August the 6th. The discussion you were having about the transfer of the Packers is true, but the first 2 years are the first quarter. If it does not elevate to a higher level, then the A for the first 2 years doesn't mean anything.
Assess the
49ers after Steve Young. They moved in, I think, with Garcia. They probably got an A the first 2 years. How is the assessment post-Steve Young not good enough because the first 2 years are the first quarter. Yes, they get an A. but it's the first quarter and should not be assumed that it guarantees anything, which is why now things become way more important, because if you don't elevate, then you're just, I don't know, good, and that isn't worth much. And the problem is you have a team better in the division that you must pass. Otherwise, you become seeded so low in the playoffs, you have almost no chance to get to the level of success that you must get to, or the 2 years of A will mean nothing in two more years.
Well, I won't disagree with any of that.
Well, Jason?
Yep.
Mike Drew in the YouTube comments brings up an interesting question, or his position. 2023 is not when the transition started. It's not when the evaluation of Goody on the transition should start. It should start with the drafting of Jordan Love. Okay, so now if we change the timing of our grading.
No, that's not what I did.
That's not what I did. We know that's not what you did. I didn't do it either. But now we're using what Mike brings up and asking the question from a different perspective.
Okay.
If we start it with the drafting of Jordan Love in 2020 and the fire that it lights under the sometimes cantankerous, complicated fella quarterback, but also includes the 2022 season when they choose not to bring back Devontae Adams and pay him, when they trade him instead, when their number one wide receiver is Alan Lazard in Aaron Rodgers' final season with the team, when they draft three wide receivers, when they draft three offensive linemen all in that 2022 draft, what does your grade look like when you look at it through that lens? Yes, I believe that's what Mike's point is.
This is true. Not all. I mean, there's a lack of understanding that Ron Wolf tried to explain, and that is this is really hard. There are tons of mistakes made by great, even Hall of Fame GMs.
Mm-hmm. Including Ron.
For people to believe that great GMs also mess up gives people a misguided view of things. So what grade do I give Goody? Because he's, to me, more important than even the head coach. The GM always is, because you determine the players they have. Mm-hmm. But again, he probably gets an A for the transition. But again, if it doesn't continue good or get better because of his pick, then he's going to lose that. His change from quarterbacks for 2 years is an A. All those other concerns may, in fact, limit him from getting to the next level because he made so many bad picks or didn't make enough great ones. So he's on the same. Yes, he gets an A for transitioning from Rodgers. By the way, this crap about Rodgers being so much better because he was pissed is crap. He's always mad about something. So the fact that he was mad about that, he should get credit for playing really well, because he played really well. That he did it because he was irritated, that has no concept of who or what Aaron Rodgers always is, and that is irritated about something.
So what exactly does Jordan Love have to look like, and what does this team have to do? Because, as you said, it's hard. There's a chance that they can do everything right and win a whole lot of football games over the next 5 years and still not win a Super Bowl.
Right, right? Like the 49ers have been.
Right. I mean, think about how long it's been since the 49ers won a Super Bowl. They've been to two. They didn't win them. And think about how long it's been since the Dallas Cowboys have been to a Super Bowl,
and
much less won one.
They will never win as long as Jerry is still alive.
So I it's hard for me to think about how people are, like, at what point are people going to not feel great about the coach or the GM? Like, let's say they go 11-6 again and they lose a first-round playoff game again. Let's say they're the 6th seed instead of the 7th seed this year.
Right.
And they lose on the road, because that's hard to win on the road in the playoffs. How are people going to view Goody and LaFleur then?
I mean, you know the answer. They'll view, they're good, but are they good enough? What do you do if you're president? You're not going to fire him. You give him another year. You know, it's
add
like
a year
where
to
they
their
at
contract.
In Buffalo. Look where they are in Buffalo. They're seriously considering firing that coach after this year. And I would if they don't make the Super Bowl. Just like they fired Tony Dungy, brought in John Gruden, and won a Super Bowl the next year.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Homer, what do you make of the Brewers right now?
August the 6th. Pat Murphy has a new problem that he didn't anticipate. Convincing his team they're not that good. They're not this good. But he wants them to believe that he thinks they're that good. They're not this good. They will be this good when they are the favorite to win the World Series on the betting line. Somebody check where they are now in terms of. They have the best record in baseball right now, but knowledgeable baseball people would question whether they're better than Cubs, Mets, Dodgers, Phillies, or Padres. So
yeah, and
it's
how,
great. It's unbelievable.
And how the question is how sustainable is this?
Yeah.
Like, this is not sustainable. 70%
correct.
Is not sustainable. So it really comes back to can you win some postseason games? Because this
right.
what
unless,
they've done this year has been unbelievable.
Yeah. Unless they're this good. I mean, I don't think it.
Are
maybe
they?
They're this good.
Are they?
So the
people that follow baseball that judge talent would say no.
So the latest World Series odds published yesterday by Hawn, by ESPN Bets. Dodgers are still the favorites at plus 240.
Yep.
Followed by the Philadelphia Phillies at plus 800 and the Detroit Tigers at plus 900.
Yeah, Tigers don't count. They're in the American League. What's the next
season? So now, after that, I don't understand. Again, this is not my area of expertise.
Just keep getting them. The numbers get bigger.
But they flip from these pluses to then the Yankees and Mets are 10-1.
That's 1,000.
Okay.
So
the Blue Jays are 12-1.
1,200.
The Astros, Mariners, and Cubs. Again, this
is
that's four. According to ESPN Bets.
Correct. That's four National League teams ahead of the Brewers.
14-1.
Yeah, 1,400.
And then the Padres. Brewers and the Padres are both 15-1.
Okay, so you have four National League teams betting the betting line, say, and then the Brewers are tied for fifth. Yeah.
By the way, after that, there is a colossal drop-off. After that, Red Sox 30-1, Rangers 40-1, Rays 75-1. Like, 15-1 is, there's a huge ledge after that.
Yeah, so they have elevated themselves to be in the league with the Cubs, Mets, Dodgers, Phillies, and Padres, and no one expected that to be the case. And we'll see what happens when those numbers will change, and they probably won't change much. Until if the Brewers had a four-game division lead September 1st, I would suspect the numbers to have changed of some note. Well, we'll certainly be ahead of the Cubs then.
So, Homer, let's say this thing continues on and the Brewers are the one seed and they win the division and they're the one overall seed.
And they get a bye.
Are you going to – will you be kind of clamoring that this team needs to win the World Series in order for it to be – successful, or are you going to be like I think a lot of Brewers fans saying, you know what, there's still the economics of it and some things that just aren't fair, and we're going to be all right if they win one series and get knocked out? I guess the question is, will the expectations change for you if they win the division and have the best record in baseball, even though the Dodgers, Mets, etc., etc., be knocking there and the Phillies with that monster payroll discrepancy?
Yeah, that's not relative to how the teams are playing. I mean, the numbers are accurate, but if they're at that point, then it will be a disappointment if they don't make the World Series. Yes. They will have earned that respect based on being in that position at the end of the regular season. I mean, just like the Packers, wherever you think they are now, if they won their division and they had the best, they were the number one seed in the NFC, I would be disappointed if they didn't make the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but Homer, we know that, and we've watched this now. I've been doing the show 9 years with Jason, and there's never been where the expectations were the Brewers need to win the World Series or it's disappointing. It's always, well, I mean, look at what we're up against, and look at this. And I've always felt like we've maybe, as Brewer fans, there's never the same amount of disappointment as there is when the Packers don't advance in the postseason.
Well, I can tell you the answer for that. That's easy.
What is it?
That people don't care about the Brewers like they care about the Packers.
No. I disagree. I think it's
the fan interest is in this state is, I don't know, five times as great for the Packers than it is for the Brewers.
I think it's more the economics and the realities that you're up against it. And now the Brewers, while they're still way up against it economically, if you have the best record, this isn't a 10-game season. It's a
long sludge.
Yep. And if they have the best, they should be favored to win the whole damn thing.
Right, but they're not because it's August 6th.
Okay.
How many games is left?
50?
Right. If they have a 4-game lead with 10 or 12, or like, then in the number one seed. I mean, there are people that are going to adhere to that and with the belief that the overall talent level, unless some of these Brewer players, if Vaughn continues to hit like Babe Ruth, then, maybe you'd have to reevaluate their talent level. That's why I'm really curious about Murphy to see how he handles this. Because at some point he doesn't want you to think they're shocking the world. He wants you to believe, no, wait, we're this good. But the last thing he wants is his players thinking that. I mean, I guarantee he's saying, great, it's August 6th. Great, it's August 7th. And he'll go do that publicly if he thinks people are taking too much for granted. And he never will because it's 162. And I don't know what – I'm more curious about what he thinks privately, and maybe that's the same as what he says publicly. But they're not this good, and he knows they're not this good.
Homer, are you ever eating anything out of your pocket?
Oh, that stuff is crazy. No, I can't. If I eat things out of my pocket, yes. But to eat something somebody else had in their pocket, oh, this whole thing. And, I mean, he's a great manager. This is goofy stuff. This is weird stuff.
You're telling me, what have you eaten out of your pocket? Like a handful of peanuts?
Candy. I don't put a peanut butter sandwich
unwrapped
in my pocket and pull it out. What?
Unwrapped candy?
No.
Yeah, like
melt in your
money
pocket.
No, not chocolate. Not chocolate.
But you have
like
good and you have loose good and plenty's in your pocket?
Like a jelly bean? A jelly bean?
Yeah, sure. Yes. Empty them out of the box.
Malted milk ball?
No, never again. Chocolate is different. There's no way you're going to do chocolate if I melt. Good and plenty ain't melting. They last 20 years. Jelly beans last 20 years.
Skittles.
But let's discuss Murphy. But forget that he's a great manager. This is weird stuff, man. Didn't he talk about getting morning pizza and out of the boxes and then putting it in his pocket? This is the weirdest eating thing I've ever heard.
I like
it.
Right? I like
it. This isn't the question.
I don't know if it's the weirdest eating thing ever.
All right, name
there's a lot of people that do stuff with
Jason.
Food.
Mel Kiper in like a bunch of ways.
Yeah, great example.
Well, Mel Kiper has pumpkin pie every day. That's not as weird as putting stuff in your pockets and then pulling it out and eating it, and then somebody else taking a bite out of that. Isn't that what happened with the reporter?
Well, in fairness to Trisha, she pulled a piece off. She didn't actually bite. But yes, she did taste it, yes.
Okay. But, I mean, it's all accepted as positive because the team's playing well. I'm telling you this, if they were 30 games under 500, be like, what do we want a manager who's just so weird?
He
food off the
about
ground
that.
Or something like that.
You ain't wrong about that. You're not wrong about that. That winning gives you your creative, you're a little bit eclectic if you're winning.
Yep.
If you're losing, that's crazy behavior. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Sushi.
All right, Homer.
To me, sushi would be
August the 6th.
You obviously can't have soup. You're not gonna pour a bowl of soup in your pants. I think sushi's probably the toughest pantsable food that you're going to eat? What's tougher to do than sushi?
Pasta.
Nah, I mean, it depends. Are you doing a striacha? Are you doing spaghetti?
Like a spaghetti and a red sauce, and it's just in your pot. I don't think that.
I need to be a part of this. I'm done.
Yeah, I was trying to let you go.
You know. You can't do liquids, Jesse. I'm talking hard food. Sushi, because it could bend off. You're going to get the raw fish. I think that's your worst pantsable transportable food.
Gruber Law Offices, one call, that's all. David and his team have been doing this for more than three decades. They are the call to make if you've been injured in an accident. 414-276-6666. 414-276-6666. Or go to the website, gruber-law.com. But don't be driving with pantsable food, trying to eat it, and then getting into an accident, because that's when trouble starts. We'll get into more of Tausch's pantsable food next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, brought to you by Grassland Butter. Grassland Dairy is Wisconsin. Learn more at grasslandbutter.com.
Get back somewhat on the clock here, but before we do, I saw this on the video stream while we were in break. You got something cooking with Pizza Hut tomorrow?
Indeed, we do.
What are you doing?
Well, you guys know we've talked about Pizza Hut now for a few years. It just so happens that in Platteville, Wisconsin, there is a retro Pizza Hut. So I'm talking, I have not been in there yet, but you know those big, thick red cups?
Oh.
And I'm guessing like those lampshades.
Like stained glass lampshades?
Yeah. So I know that those are in play. Am I hoping there's a Galaga and a Ms. Pac-Man video game set up there? I am. Are we hoping that there's some real good retro pricing on pizzas and on different sodas and things like that? We are, and there is. So myself and TBD will be out there post-practice tomorrow in Platteville. So if you're headed through the Driftless area and you want to grab some great Pizza Hut pizza, wings, breadsticks, whatever it might be, pop on out tomorrow from 12 to 2.
Jesse, have you been there? Do they have the old school like roof and everything?
I haven't been there, but I will be making the trip down tomorrow. I can promise you that. Woo! I will be going to take advantage of the great discount throwback prices. And this is only at the Pizza Hut in Platteville, where Tausch and mysterious company TBD will be set up in attendance.
Yeah. It's been a, let's just put it this way, it's been a little bit of a dicey process that we've gone through, but I think we're going to have a lot of fun, and there might be some, I can't get into any more details as we sit. Hopefully tomorrow I'll be able to.
I am comfortable saying I think it will be a family affair in some capacity tomorrow. Can I say that? Can I leave it there?
Yeah, I think your pseudo dad is going to be there. And me and him, if he does come, which we believe he will, we may be dressed in some retro clothes, if you will.
But you're going to do the show from practice. You're not doing it from the Pizza Hut?
Well, practice just finished up. They started at 8:50 and finished at, I don't know, whatever time it is now.
11.
So yeah. We got plenty of time. I'm going to finish the show. I'll probably maybe start meandering down to Pizza Hut about 11:30 tomorrow. It might be part of the plan. And maybe do the last half hour from the local Hut in Platteville. Yeah, sit in a booth. Get me a soda and just sit back and relax.
Get the salad bar.
It's like right down the road from the football field, right? You're like, it is very
close.
I
will give you full updates as I'm spending a day here. I'm going to watch some film and do some other stuff. I'm going to spend a day in Platteville, so I'm sure I'll be well-versed on the city and where the retro Pizza Hut will be.
All right. Well, we look forward to that. That will be fun.
If there's one game in there, Jason, that you would be – They could sit there and play for hours. What is it? What would it be? You know, the old, you sit down, the joystick on the table. Man, I remember spending some time waiting for my personal pan pizza after I read 30 books that month. What's the game?
Paperboy.
I loved Space Invaders. Space Invaders was great.
Ms. Pac-Man. Yeah.
Galaga. Pong. Galaga was always Galaga, my favorite.
Yeah. Space Invaders was the GOAT. But Pac-Man and Ms. Pac-Man probably are the games that you.
What was the one think. Where you went around? I always hated this one. The one where you went around where you, like, the thing grew as you collected the dots.
Centipede.
Centipede. I hated Centipede. I was not good at Centipede, but I kept. It was, like, addicting how much I wanted to play it, even though I was so bad at it.
Ah, that's always tricky. Atari Baseball was the game, but that wasn't at Pizza Hut.
They didn't have it at Pizza Hut, right.
Exactly. No, they didn't. That's what I just said. But Atari Baseball, when you start looking at old school games, the home run down the third base, well, that's just good stuff. It's just good stuff.
We got to get to the 11 clock hour with Tausch down in Platteville. Want to remind you to tune into Behind the Bucks, which is on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Behind the Bucks brings you exclusive access and untold stories about the greatest stars and moments in Bucks history. So go behind the scenes of Giannis' Emmy-nominated documentary, hear about the true origins of Bucks in Six, and more. Find Behind the Bucks on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, and the new ESPN Wisconsin app. You can also find it wherever you get your podcasts. Behind the Bucks, presented by Gallagher. The 11 o'clock hour of Wilde and Tausch starts in 2 minutes, so stick around.
Don't go anywhere. Another hour of Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, is coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.